Hello and welcome back to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's political podcast. I'm Laura Prendergast and I'm today joined by Henry Newman, Director of Open Europe, and Katie Balls. So Katie, Parliament's back next week and the Prime Minister's already under quite a bit of pressure over her deal. Is she trying to get some concessions again?
As far as we know, she is trying. She has been trying at some telephone diplomacy in recent days and trying to basically speak to EU leaders, appeal to them to get something she can present to MPs next week, we expect, before she tries to put this deal to a vote, something she has delayed once already. And we expect that the week after next. What she needs is something which is legally binding, which suggests that the backstop can't go on forever. But so far, and it could just be great secrecy, which we know, you know, this government is not prone to leaks or anything. So far, there's little sign that she has that. And definitely the mood music in Brussels and around EU leaders doesn't seem to be particularly positive either. So she could pull something out of the bag. If she doesn't, though, I do think she is in real trouble again trying to get this through, because it doesn't feel like over Christmas MPs have really calmed down. I mean, we've seen lots of Eurosceptics pick up, you know, the arguments again quite with the same intensity as before. You've seen Brexiteers say that the numbers haven't changed. There could have been a few waverers, but I don't think there have been many yet who have decided to vote for this deal, because everyone is waiting to see what she brings back. Because Theresa May ultimately said that she was renegotiating. She uses different words depending on what suits the mood, you know, or getting clearer language. So at the moment, I don't think she has more votes than she had previously. And I think there's some MPs who, if they think there's a chance of it passing, might decide to vote for it. But if the margin's that big, they're not going to.
And Henry, I mean, do you think the EU are going to be willing to give her any concessions?
I think the EU overall want to help. I don't think they look on Theresa May quite favourably. They think she plays quite a straight bat, and they want to see this deal, which they've spent a lot of time and effort negotiating, get over the line. Ultimately, Brussels is a deal-making machine, and this is their deal, and they might be happy to tweak it, although not reopen it fundamentally. But I think their concern in the December European Council, when Theresa May went in and had that sort of public argument, or became public argument with President Juncker after he supposedly insulted her. She was seen then as having asked for something really impossible, which was to put a very short expiry date on the backstop. So I don't think they can do that. And they also, I think, were concerned that if they gave any concession too early, that would just be banked by her critics on both sides, and then they'd ask for more. So I think I'm actually not expecting for the Prime Minister to come back with that much before the deal is first put to Parliament. So we know that's going to happen in the week beginning the 14th of January. It'll be put to Parliament and it'll almost certainly be defeated. I think that won't be a surprise. But the question is, when will it ultimately be? Will it ultimately be able to get through? Because the closer we get to the end of March, the more the choices will clarify. And there are only really three options. Either you leave without a deal, no deal exit, and you can try and dress that up as a managed no deal, but ultimately there's steps we can take unilaterally, but we'll be leaving the EU without an exit, and that'll be certainly very disruptive. Even those advocating it, like Dominic Raab, said we're looking at months of disruption. Then you've got Theresa May's deal, perhaps in some tweaked form, perhaps with some dressing up around the possible future end destination. You could put it closer to Norway if you wanted to appeal to Nick Bowles. You could put a permanent customs union if you wanted to appeal to the Labour Party. But ultimately, those are all different versions of her deal. And then the third option is to stop Brexit altogether, either via general election or via referendum. And for the moment, that doesn't seem very likely. But those are the only three options. And Parliament, after the Gina Miller case, has put us on a course where we will be leaving the EU at the end of March this year, in very few weeks' time. And for the Parliament now to be turning around and complaining about the government's no-deal prep is particularly surprising to me.
Katie, what's David Davis up to? He's today said that she should delay the vote again. He said the closer we are to no-deal, the better the chance of a good deal. What's he up to?
Well, David Davis is suggesting Theresa May should delay this vote. This has raised a few eyebrows, because I think previously in some of the many articles David Davis has written on Brexit since exiting his role as Brexit Secretary, I think he has accused her of can-kicking. And it does seem, if you keep delaying that vote, you are kicking the can down the road. His argument is that as the clock ticks, no-deal preparation is ongoing. We are seeing more no-deal preparation, and that is sending a strong message to Brussels that the UK could walk away, that the UK could risk a no-deal, and that means that they are more likely to offer several concessions before this final vote. I think sceptics could say that given that David Davis is someone who perhaps could live with no-deal compared to Theresa May's deal. We know that he'd prefer a Canada plus, 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 but it might be that you are letting the clock tick, so it gets to the point that if it is voted down, there isn't time to stop Brexit. You know, there could be something like that. So I think that is one theory doing the rounds. Personally, I think Theresa May would struggle to push this vote too far because it didn't go down particularly well when she pushed the vote the first time. Their confidence vote was tabled in her. You can't do that again because that is she's now immune from that for a whole year. But there is a chance that you would have MPs who are pro-EU, particularly Remain MPs in the Conservative Party, decide that this had gone on enough and maybe join with in Labour with some kind of or threaten to join in a, you know, emotion of confidence against the government in order to get this vote going. I don't think that Theresa May has the authority to push this vote to the right down to the wire.
And I think Brussels also wants to see this vote come to Parliament. They were quite sort of surprised by the decision to delay it. And I think that's it's an important moment when it first gets voted down. I was struck in a conversation I had with a senior Labour backbencher shortly before the Christmas break, where this backbencher was saying that they wouldn't be voting for the deal in January. And of course, the immediate response from me and the other people discussing it with this backbenchers were, well, would you vote for it in February or in March? And what concessions might you ask for then? I think the actually, in some respects, what happens on the Labour front bench is more important than anything that happens within the Conservative Party. Because if Jeremy Corbyn doesn't back a second referendum, and we'll find that out over the next few weeks, if he does not, then if you're a Labour MP, you won't want this deal, probably. You probably don't like many aspects of it. You might want a closer relationship than the deal offers. But if you vote against this deal, the UK will leave the EU at the end of March, unless Parliament steps in to stop that. And therefore, if we're getting to mid-February or early March or even late March, and the choice is becoming clearer and clearer that either you back the deal ultimately or abstain on the deal, or you let the country leave without a deal, I think some of those MPs may begin to reconsider their positions.
And you've seen Jeremy Corbyn this week when this Labour poll came out showing that 7 in 10 members want a second referendum. He responded to that by saying that it still was not party policy to seek a second referendum anytime soon. Technically, it's on the table, but they don't want to do that right now. But he said if Theresa May's deal is voted down, she could go and renegotiate it. Now, when he says renegotiate it, I think he means make it Labour's deal. That's going to be a little bit harder to do given that there's 6 tests that needs to pass that I don't think Labour's own deal can pass in terms of all the, you know, benefits. But she could veer towards a softer Brexit, so try and change the future declaration to make it a permanent customs union, all things to get Labour votes. But I think in doing that, it would probably be a win for Corbyn in the sense that you look like you're dictating policy, but you're also fracturing the Tory party because that would push the Tory party to, you know, even closer breaking point. So maybe you could get the deal through and then you could do your confidence motion this time, helped by Tory MPs who are very angry at Theresa May. So although that is a way through, I don't think it's a good one for Theresa May either.
Let's talk about Sajid Javid because he's back in the papers again today. There's a story in The Sun about him referring to himself in the third person. Katie, why are there so many briefings going on at the moment against Sajid?
Well, I think there's a general rule that you never want to be a front runner in a Tory leadership contest because people are out to get you. And Boris Johnson has definitely suffered from this before. There's often been a Get Boris campaign. I think Sajid Javid has been in the news a lot recently because of the incidents in the Channel. But I think there is an extra dimension to it in the fact that he is seen as the favourite probably. Now, if you look at the bookies' odds, he is the favourite. We know at some point Theresa May is going to have to stand down. She has said she is. So even if she doesn't, they can make it happen in at least a year's time. So there will be a Tory leadership contest. And I think we are seeing lots of briefing against Sajid Javid, partly because he is the one to beat right now. And this story is suggesting that Sajid Javid refers to himself as the Sajid or the Saj. And so the Saj will sort that. I mean, people around him insist they've never heard him say that.
I think it could be a joke. I mean, it sounds like something that might be a joke.
Perhaps it's a joke. I also don't think, though, Sajid Javid is necessarily the joking type. Perhaps he is. But he's not seen as laugh a minute in the sense of, you know, some cabinet ministers. In general, he is seen as being a little bit more reserved, perhaps in his inner circle. So it's one of those stories that obviously it's come from rival ministers, or so the story says. But you can see, I think on the wider context, there are lots of negative Sajid stories right now. And I think some people probably have a motive.
I think the difficulty for Sajid is he's been seen as, or the Sajid, been seen as measuring curtains in South Downing Street and being a tall poppy, exactly as you're just saying. And I think it's therefore inevitable there's been quite a lot of pressure on him. He's also relatively newly in the post. And we've seen really a lot of the jostling between different figures as to who could position themselves in the best place for the forthcoming leadership race. And of course, Theresa May called time on that herself. It was her sort of last throw the kitchen sink at it attempt to get through the challenge that she saw just before Christmas, was to say that she wouldn't fight the next election. And that, some respects, of course, that had been entirely obvious ever since the disaster in 2017's general election. But still, it began to open up really a more explicit campaign to replace her. And we're seeing, therefore, I think one of the difficulties we're going to see over the next few months is that those people who see themselves as contenders for the Tory leadership are going to be more and more briefing against their colleagues, but also positioning themselves very explicitly vis-a-vis the membership of the party, who of course have a deciding role in choosing the next prime minister. And that for them, that for the whole government, will cause a huge amount of problems as we go forward. And we've seen some of that with statements from various different cabinet ministers in different directions on Brexit already, but I think we'll see even more of it.
Thank you, Henry and Katie. And just a reminder, there are still a few tickets left to the Jacob Rees-Mogg In Conversation with Fraser Nelson event. It's on the 26th of February in Westminster. And if you'd like to get a ticket, just go to spectator.co.uk/mogg. Thanks for listening.